Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Sarah Radcliffe, Managing Attorney for the Mental Health Rights Project at Disability Rights Oregon. Sarah just released her report, The Unwanteds, Looking for Help, Landing in Jail, an analysis of how trespass arrests at Portland area hospitals criminalize mental illness. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Karen. Thank you.
So, Sarah, Disability Rights Oregon has for years visited jails and prisons and has worked tirelessly to improve treatment and conditions for people with mental health issues who find themselves entangled in the criminal justice system. Jail is the worst place for people with mental illness. But your report, you found that Portland area hospitals are having people arrested and jailed. People with mental illness who went to the hospital desperately seeking help. So who are these unwanteds and what are their crimes?
So we looked at just a slice of people who are arrested at hospitals in Portland. So we looked at people who are arrested for trespass. There are other possible crimes, disorderly conduct, assault, things like that, that someone could be charged with.
But nonviolent crimes.
So for this report, we just looked at trespass. And we looked at cases where the trespass was the highest or only charge. So the crime of trespass is basically just continuing to be in a space after you've been told to leave. So really just, you know, existing in that space criminalized through the trespass statutes. So the reason that we looked at trespass is that there's really broad agreement across law enforcement, courts, the state hospital, treatment professionals, advocates. We pretty much all agree that, you know, and regardless of where you stand about the criminal justice system or criminal justice reform overall, everybody really agrees that low-level mental health-related behaviors should not be criminalized. That's bad for the individual. It's bad for the individual to be in jail. And it's also really costly for our system and really ineffective at getting at the root issues, you know, whatever's going on for the individual. It usually makes the situation worse. So we all agree, and yet it keeps happening. So we decided to look at trespass arrests at hospitals because trespass is really the lowest charge that exists in our system. It, like I explained earlier, it's really just the crime of being present in a space where you're not wanted. And showing up at the emergency department looking for help is kind of the most mental health related, you know, that you've got a real nexus with looking for health care there. And so we decided to look at those at that intersection in order to get a slice of cases that really, you know, just it's so clear that these cases really should have been diverted from the criminal justice system.
Your report included a study that looked at Oregonians who had been booked in jail four or more times in the past year, and these people were 150 times more likely to have visited an emergency room compared to other adults enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan.
That's right. So the Council on State Governments came to Oregon and did a study that was the foundation for a legislative proposal this session. And they looked at people who had been arrested four or more times within a year. So people who are really frequently in and out of jail. And they found that those people were 150 times more likely to have also visited an emergency department. You know, there are also connections with homelessness and with mental illness. But really, it just shows that the population of people who are showing up frequently in jails is also the same population that's showing up frequently at emergency departments. There are people who are looking for help, and there's really no help that exists. And so they're likely to kind of fall into the criminal justice system on low-level charges because those supports, that the supports that they need don't exist in our communities.
And is this a new phenomenon? Has this increased with people visiting the emergency rooms? What are the driving factors here?
I'm not sure that we have good data of, you know, kind of the past 10 or 20 years, but certainly anecdotally, what I hear from emergency departments and jails and community mental health providers is that acuity is going up and the volume of people is going up. So there are more and more people who have unmet behavioral health needs. And, you know, we know that homelessness is rising and it's really hard to take care of your health when you're living on the streets, you know, whether that's mental health or physical health. So we asked Portland Police to provide the police reports for anyone who was arrested for trespass at a Portland area hospital during a one-year period from the summer of 2017 through the summer of 2018. And then when they provided the response, a couple of reports from fall of 2018 were included too, which we included in our pool. So we looked at 142 police reports involving arrests for trespass at Portland area hospitals. That was kind of the sample that we used. So of those people who were arrested in those police reports, we found that 35% were identified as people of color, which is an overrepresentation in Multnomah County, according to the 2010 census. And of course, that may have changed a bit, but Multnomah County is about 80% white. We also found that 77% of the people who were arrested were identified as homeless, and that's a huge overrepresentation. You know, countywide, really only about 3% of our population is homeless. You know, the most common scenario that we saw is someone visited the emergency department, they were probably stabilized, and then they were discharged, but they didn't have anywhere to go. Maybe it was the middle of the night and the buses weren't running, or you know, it was cold, it was winter, they didn't have any shoes, they didn't have anywhere to go, and so they refused to leave, and at that point they were arrested. That was by far the most common scenario that we saw. So in terms of the drivers, you know, what's giving rise to these issues, you know, we know from, like, prior studies that people who are homeless are much more likely to be arrested in Portland. The Oregonian found that over 50% of arrests across the board involved homeless people. And we also know that there's great unmet health care and, in particular, behavioral health care needs. So there was, in 2018, the county hired the Human Services Research Institute to come in and analyze our mental health care system in Multnomah County. And one of the findings that really stood out to me is that in 2017, less than a third of the 6,800 Medicaid or Oregon Health Plan enrollees with a diagnosed mental health condition were connected to one of the agencies that provides mental health services.
So these are people that have a diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
and less than one third are connected to a mental health provider in Multnomah County.
That's right, according to the HSRI study. And one of the other findings of the study was that the mental health system is really more provider-driven versus person-centered. So there just aren't a lot of programs that are able to reach out to someone who's homeless and, you know, bring the services to them rather than requiring them to go online and find a provider who's accepting new patients and schedule an appointment several months out and make sure to come in on time and, you know, conform with behavioral requirements in the waiting room and in the doctor's office. And, you know, there are a lot of hurdles to accessing mental health care. So the more difficult to serve individuals are left out.
And in Multnomah County, it is known that there is a lack of predictable pathways for individuals to access care. So, mm-hmm. and I think this is across the board, across the state, really.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, people with mental health conditions or concerns, it's very difficult. Sometimes they leave a hospital with a list of shelters or places to find a home, and they have to navigate the transportation system. They need money. As you said, sometimes they don't have clothing, shoes. They need support. They need help with these mm-hmm. types of things to get on with their lives.
Mm-hmm. A really compelling example of how our system is incredibly expensive but also not at all helpful is the aid and assist track. So we looked at these trespass arrests, and then we had a law student look up the cases in the court system and figure out, so what happened? You know, did the DA's office pursue the charge? Was the person competent to aid and assist, which means, like, did they understand the charges that they were facing? Were they able to effectively work with their attorney? Or because of their mental illness, did they not meet that threshold of being able to aid and assist?
So basically, these are people that are in crisis or decompensating in the jail, and they're unable to aid and assist in their own defense.
That's right. You know, some people may be decompensating or in crisis, and other people may have like a traumatic brain injury or a fixed delusion or, you know, just a chronic mental health condition that prevents them from understanding the charges and working with their attorney. So it's not necessarily crisis level.
Yes, and you have information in your report about that the Oregon State Hospital found that 66% of the aid and assist patients reported that they were homeless immediately prior to arrest. So talk about that, Sarah.
Yeah, so the Oregon Health Authority has called the state hospital the world's most expensive homeless shelter because 66% of people coming to the state hospital on an aid and assist order were previously homeless, and the state hospital costs $1,300 per person per day. And what's so painful about that expenditure is that it doesn't do anything to help the person because, you know, on average, people are staying for 70 or 80 days on an aid and assist order. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, potentially $100,000 to try to restore them to competency to face potentially a minor misdemeanor crime. And then when they're discharged back to jail and then right back to the streets. You know, obviously, they're going to get credit for time served on that minor charge. They're not going to be facing prison time on a trespass charge when they've already been in custody for months and months.
And I just want to say, too, they receive treatment at the state hospital only to competency,
mm-hmm.
not to wellness or well-being, only to the point where they could successfully answer a few questions to show that they can aid and assist in their own defense, and then they're
right.
sent back to jail.
Right. And, you know, if you're a person who's civilly committed and you go to the state hospital, the silver lining is that you're going to discharge with really excellent discharge planning. So when you leave the hospital doors, you're going to have a place to live. You're going to have a provider lined up in the community. You're going to have your Oregon health plan and your SNAP benefits and, you know, potentially SSI. You're going to have wraparound mental health supports in the community. You might be connected to like an ACT team. So you're going to have a really soft and supportive landing. If you enter the state hospital through the aid and assist door, you're just going to discharge back to jail and then right back to the streets. Most jails in Oregon have very little to offer in terms of discharge planning. So whatever you had when you walked in that door, even if it was just like a safe place to pitch your tent, maybe a service animal, you know, maybe some friends who would watch your stuff while you were trying to redeem cans or, you know, whatever it is that you had, you won't have when you exit that process. So, you know, we've just spent $100,000 of our Oregon General Fund money in order to just set you back several steps. It's really a dysfunctional expenditure.
They're set up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So you just talked about the Oregon State Hospital's discharge planning if you're there on a commitment. But hospitals such as Providence, Emmanuel, the other Portland hospitals, they have a state and federal mandate. They have a legal obligation to provide a discharge plan. What should that look like? What should the hospitals be doing instead of trespassing these folks and having them arrested?
So there's a new law in Oregon that hospitals were required to begin complying with as of the first of this year that extends a lot of the discharge planning requirements that have always applied to inpatient units two emergency departments when they're discharging a patient who is there for a behavioral health crisis. They should do a discharge plan that evaluates any need for post-hospitalization services and the availability of those services. They need to assess the patient's capacity for self-care in the environment that they came from and really connect them to services. If it's a mental health issue, they also need to schedule a 7-day follow-up appointment. Patients have the right to involve a lay caregiver, so that could be a friend or a family member, in their discharge planning. They have the right to receive a behavioral health assessment and a long-term needs assessment, which looks at the patient's income, housing situation, insurance, and aftercare support. They have the right to access care coordination in order to facilitate a transition to outpatient or community-based providers, peer support, or lay caregivers. So help kind of navigating the system, and then they have the right to a follow-up appointment scheduled within 7 days. They also have the right to receive caring contacts, which are like a brief communication, kind of to check in and see how you're doing, and case management to assist with accessing medical and behavioral health care, such as the Oregon Health Plan or public assistance. So it's really like a pretty comprehensive discharge plan that's required for anyone leaving inpatient or anyone who's visited the emergency department in behavioral health crisis. Not all of the reports we looked at looked like behavioral health crisis. Some of them looked like, you know, kind of chronic, you know, more everyday sorts of things. But for crisis situations, that's what's required. And interestingly, we don't have a lot of good information about whether hospitals are complying with that new law. The Oregon Health Authority did a survey to try to find out whether hospitals had revised their policies after the new law went into effect, and only 21 of the 59 Oregon hospitals responded to the survey. So we really need some more aggressive licensing enforcement from the Oregon Health Authority in order to ensure that that the law is being complied with.
And what about the police? Your report indicates that the police are failing to divert in a lot of cases. What is the reason for that?
There were a few cases where the police really didn't want to take the person to jail. At the beginning of the report, there's a woman who's described as Betty. All the names are pseudonyms. But Betty was 76 years old. The police received a call for an unwanted woman at Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital. But when police showed up, they realized she had already been to OHSU earlier that day. She was described in the report as having onset of dementia, hardly able to see, barely able to walk, having injuries related to an assault at a shelter. You know, just a lot of serious health issues in addition to being 76 years old. And the officer who responded, you know, all throughout the report, it's him saying, like, gosh, I really hate to take her to jail, but she did commit the crime of staying at the hospital after she was told to leave. So he calls Adult Protective Services to see if they could set her up with a hotel voucher for the night. And they say she has a history of property destruction and that they can't provide a voucher because that could result in county vouchers not being accepted by certain hotels anymore. So he calls his sergeant to see whether she could just stay in the precinct lobby overnight. And then they decide that that would not be safe for her. And so he ends up just taking her to jail. But I mean, I think what that shows is that, A, police are not the right responders. This is a social service, public health issue, and hospitals should either be providing the social work and discharge planning in order to help somebody in this situation connect to services, or they should fund, you know, some other agency to do that. But this is not a law enforcement priority. This is like an elderly woman with multiple health issues and disabilities who has no place to go. So we really would like to see police not responding to these calls and to have an alternative, you know, kind of the street roots proposal for a non-law enforcement street response. I think that something like that could make a big difference.
Sarah, I just want to mention also that in Betty's case, she had medical issues as mm-hmm. well as mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people, they're homeless. And not only do they have mental health needs, but they also have medical and sometimes multiple medical conditions as well. So mm-hmm. talk about the Street Roots approach.
So there are, I think, a few different proposals floating around about how exactly this would look. But the basic model is based off of a program in the Lane County area called CAHOOTS that pairs a medic and a mental health specialist. I think it could be a peer specialist to go out and respond to whatever kinds of calls occur in the community. So some of them are crisis situations, and some of them are, you know, might be someone who needs wound care or someone who needs a ride to a shelter. So there's no kind of there's no requirement that the call be at crisis level in order to trigger their response. They're able to respond to these more kind of day-to-day struggles. And they don't bring a law enforcement escort. Almost all the time, they're responding on their own. And, you know, it sounds like CAHOOTS is a really trusted resource in the Lane County area, whereas a law enforcement response, you know, with their uniforms and their weapons, you know, the impending possibility of arrest, you know, no matter what kind of training law enforcement have had or how gently they approach a person, just their presence is going to escalate the situation and be triggering and scary for a lot of people. So something like CAHOOTS, where, you know, you have non-uniformed helpers arriving, is just going to totally change the dynamic and make it better from the get-go.
And I like that your report also calls on hospital security to learn de-escalation and crisis intervention techniques. And I was surprised to hear that they aren't trained in these techniques.
You know, I actually didn't get deep into the training or qualifications of security personnel at the hospital, so I can't really speak to that. But what I can say is that trespassing a patient should not be a decision that security makes independently. The hospital should bring in a clinical perspective on those decisions, because security, you know, no matter what kind of training they've had, they're really not in a position to say, you know, actually, this behavior is related to the person's mental illness. We read reports of people who are trespassed for, like, speaking nonsensically or pretending to talk on the phone when they weren't actually talking on the phone. You know, things that, you know, I think a clinician would have come in and said, oh, that's not threatening behavior, and it's likely related to a mental health condition. And, you know, let's see if we can work in a more positive way.
So, Sarah Radcliffe, what are Disability Rights Oregon's recommendations?
So first, we want to see hospitals overhaul their trespass policies. So, you know, at the very least, someone who's not engaging in violent behavior should not be trespassed, and there shouldn't be a law enforcement call. And then, like I mentioned earlier, decisions about whether to trespass someone should be made with clinical input. There should be a clinical review. And then there also should be some clarity around the process. Some hospitals, you know, have their trespass notices last forever. Other hospitals have a process where a person can appeal, but it's pretty unclear. So we've had clients reach out to us saying, you know, I've been trespassed and I'm worried that, like, what if I get picked up by an ambulance and they take me to that hospital where I'm not supposed to go? Am I going to be arrested then? So that's a real barrier to care. And the emergency department, you know, both in terms of how it functions in our community and under federal law, is a place that can't turn people away. So it needs to be clear that you can go to the emergency department. Second, we want the Oregon Health Authority to make sure that legal requirements around discharge planning are being followed and that patients get the handoff to social services and to community-based mental health care that they're entitled to, and that arrest isn't used as kind of a workaround to get around some of those discharge planning requirements. Third, we want to see a non-law enforcement crisis and street response, so that, you know, we think that police shouldn't respond to these calls. You know, for a nonviolent patient who's not wanting to leave without a referral to social services, that should not be a law enforcement priority. But instead, we want hospitals to contribute resources to help support a non-law enforcement response.
Such as CAHOOTS in Lane County.
Yes. And then the other recommendations really have to do with investment of resources into kind of our social service and housing and mental health care safety net. So we've made a few recommendations: expanded access to community-based mental health care. You know, we know that from the 2018 study of Multnomah County's mental health system, we know that there are a lot of barriers to accessing care, especially for people who have challenges related to drug use in addition to mental health issues or homelessness. We don't have enough culturally specific resources in our continuum of mental health care. There are some other promising models, such as recuperative care, and hospitals are partnering with Central City Concern and with the coordinated care organizations to invest some funding into supportive housing and recuperative care. Those are two really effective, evidence-based solutions. So recuperative care is for people who are discharging from the hospital, but they have ongoing healthcare needs that would be impacted by homelessness. They can stay at a place that has some nursing, medical, mental health services, but it's kind of a step down from the hospital. Mm-hmm. Care that you might be able to receive in your home if you had a home.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, your report is available on the Disability Rights Oregon website. So give that website.
So it's DROregon, spelled out, .org. And there's also a video that we made of an individual who was arrested at a hospital who tells her story and how that arrest impacts her.
Talk a little bit about what people can do.
If you or a loved one has been trespassed from a hospital, you can call Disability Rights Oregon. We provide information to people in those situations. But you can also file a complaint with the hospital. You can write a letter to the hospital to appeal the trespass. Also, if you have concerns about discharge planning, that's something that you may be able to file a licensing complaint about. So if you go to the Oregon Health Authority's website, there's information about how to file a complaint with licensing. And I think, you know, there's the people's rights around discharge planning, I think, are probably little known in the community. So just to talk with your friends and family about those rights is important. There's also a discharge planning checklist the Association of Oregon Hospitals put together in partnership with NAMI. You know, it's a checklist that you can take to the hospital with you, or you could bring to a friend or family member who's in the hospital, that kind of walks through what hospitals are required to do before you leave.
Sarah, where can they find that checklist?
So you can find the discharge planning checklist by Googling Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And the document is called Discharge Planning for Patients Hospitalized for Mental Health Treatment.
Sarah Radcliffe, Disability Rights Oregon, thank you so much for your report. I hope it does some good and the treatment of these folks at our local hospitals improves greatly.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to come and talk about the report, Karen.
This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Jason Rizzitello, and thank you for listening.